John, you and I were talking before this, and we said, what could be something fun to talk about? And we thought, what pisses us off? And I know it's a funny topic, but, I mean, obviously, I'm a doctor, you're a doctor, we both see patients, we both have a significant role in education, both students and the public. And so what pisses us off? What, when you get home at the end of the day, you know, just makes you upset? And what is really kind of, you know, at the end of that anger on most days for you?
Yeah, you know, you probably know I'm involved with something called the Empathy Project, the NYU Langone Empathy Project, which is to try to use film and the arts to try to teach doctors and other clinicians in training and clinicians to be more empathetic and sensitive and more effective providers. So I'm concentrating on, I've been thinking a lot about this, you know, we got to make doctors better. We got to have them turning away from the computer and we have to have them looking at people and all that stuff. We know doctors and other clinicians have a long way to go. But there's another person in that encounter. And somebody recently said to me, imagine you go to work, your job, and half of the people aren't there. So the other half of the office is the patient. They've got to show up. So, you know, there are so many things that I try to, over the years, I do internal medicine and gastroenterology. I'm kind of a dinosaur because I really like the internal medicine. So I don't just do my specialty. And I've kind of tried to train them, teach them to do certain things. One is, do your homework. And, you know, what kind of homework would that be, David?
Well, listen, I kick students out of my office when they don't do their homework. you know, it's a privilege to do what you and I do. It's a privilege to be in medical school. It's a privilege to see patients. And so if they don't view it as such, I just kick them out. But, you know, at the same time, you know, we're getting different kids into medicine than the old days. We're getting kids who are awesome at standardized tests, who can memorize everything. It's about memorization. And I want kids who can talk.
Yeah.
I keep calling them kids. Sorry. I want adults and students
who
can
talk. I'll tell you, back in the old days.
And who can observe. I mean, the power of observation.
Yes.
William Osler, you know, founded American medicine. He did it because he would stand by the bedside and with the doctors talk with the patient. It wasn't doctors in a room discussing the patient. It was with the patient still at Hopkins, at Grand Rounds.
Right.
The patient starts off and tells his story or her story with the doctor on stage, and they're invited to stay. And, you know, Oster would go bed to bed, and the first ward at Hopkins was a circle. So that's why it's called going on rounds. Grand Rounds was walking around that circular ward at Hopkins.
Yeah. And, of course, you know, we talk about computers taking over the physician's role and all these devices, and but no computer can put their hand on the hand of another of a patient and just reassure. But so there's a lot to be talked about what doctors can do better, clinicians can do better, but patients. So if you're a patient watching this, you talk about what ticks us off in terms of the patients, maybe. Well, one thing for me, we'll go back and forth. So one of them for me is and when I say do your homework, know what medicines you're taking. When you come in and say, I'm taking the little white pill, that does not narrow it down. And, you know, you need to know what medicines, you need to know your family history. If it's the first time you're seeing a new doctor, I think that's probably a good way to go at it. First time you're seeing a new doctor, know your family history. Now, a lot of people don't know their family history, so do your homework. Call your relatives. And by the way, we know that when your grandmother said she had stomach cancer, that could be anything, right? People didn't say the word ovary back then, you know, and certainly breast cancer was a lot of cancer was a stigma. So that can be a big question mark. And as a gastroenterologist, when somebody said they had stomach cancer, a grandmother had stomach cancer, I'm thinking, is it colon cancer? Was it ovarian cancer? So there's that. Write things down. Make a list of your problems so that you don't, because when you come in there, you can get so flustered and a lot of doctors only have 15 minutes or 20 minutes. So how can you be most efficient at saying, okay, here's my most important problem. Second, so I think, you know, write things down. And I'm working with Delia Efron on the NYU Langone Empathy Project. And she had a good point, which was, if you only have 15 minutes, this is a tough one. If you only have 15 minutes, don't ask your doctor about his children. Right, that seems like, well, you want to have a relationship, but on the other hand, you don't want to waste time. You know, you want to be efficient. That's a tough one, I find, because I do like to have the conversation. But
what gets me is that, you know, patients can be so gullible. They could be the smartest person in the world, a CEO, a remarkable person comes in to see me, And they said, well, this doctor told me once, or I read once, that this herb could cure my disease. So I stopped my medicines and I started to take it. I go, are you serious? Think of what you're saying. You know, really think about it. Well, I saw it on the internet. And so, you know, it's the notion, use that same judgment that you use to buy a stock. Use that same judgment that you use to talk to your children about your own health, and they don't. I mean, sometimes they can be easily sold on something, which upsets me.
I love those moments because, you know, you take a deep breath and you say, okay, let's just go through the logic of that. If something is pharmacologically active, it's an herb, it's a supplement, it's pharmacologically active and can help you. It's pharmacologically active and can hurt you. So when you come in there, at the very, very least, tell me everything you're really taking. I say to people, brown bag it. Take everything you're taking, put it in a brown bag, and dump it out on the table. Let's look at it together. Because there can be drug-herb interactions.
Dropbox. Take every lab from every doctor, put it under labs. Take every report of scans, put it in scans. Take a picture of every medicine bottle you have and put it in the thing called medicine. So anytime in my office, you can't say, well, I'll text you later with it. Pull it up on your phone. Nobody gets sick 9 to 5. You get sick at 10 p.m. or when you're on vacation on some remote island. And if you have all your information, you're going to stop a lot of tests, a lot of poking, a lot of prodding when you have all your information. You are in charge of you. And people don't get that. Well, my doctor decided. I go, well, then what was your LDL, your bad cholesterol? I don't know. My doctor decided I needed Lipitor. I go, this isn't a decision a doctor makes. It's you and your doctor together. I want you to know your information. It's a different world we're living in. Yeah.
There's this term, of course, shared decision making. And I love that. It takes, by the way, takes some of the pressure off. Who wants to play God? We never were God. And I never wanted that role. When people come in with stuff from the internet, great. Just spend some time doing research. I can help look at it and say, well, yeah, oh, I didn't know that. And by the way, don't be afraid to say, I don't know. Like, I'll write things down and say, you know what, I'm going to research that myself because I didn't know that. And people do that. I learn a lot from my patients, especially about things that maybe just came out. So that, you know, I think at the end of the day, it's fun to be a doctor, right? And being a doctor is a privilege. It's an eternally humbling profession, medicine. And my teacher told me, Al Markowitz, is that, you know what, John, if you let patients talk long enough, they'll actually tell you what's the matter.
Yeah.
And that you were talking about people maybe not saying exactly what's wrong at the beginning. If you make people comfortable enough, they can tell you what's wrong right at the beginning. And you try to avoid the doorknob moment, the by-the-way moment, where they finally, as they're leaving, feel maybe comfortable enough to turn and say, oh, by the way, and now you know what's going to follow is going to be an incredibly important thing. By the way, I've had crushing chest pain for the past 3 months. So you try to have that relationship where you're never pejorative. You're never making them feel embarrassed. It's a no embarrassment zone. And then it's fun. It's this wonderful conversation where you get to learn. I mean, think of all the things that you learn from your patients.
It's interesting because, I'm sure you do and I do. Part of it is I get these some of the smartest people I've ever met, and I have to instruct them as something to do. And this is the first time in their life when they come to see me and they're pretty sick, they've lost control. And so you have to realize a lot of time, it's not necessarily them talking, it's the disease talking sometimes. Yeah. But I have to make them realize, you know, make it be their decision, and I have to make them understand. I've learned, I want you to do this. They kind of roll their eyes. But I explain to them the data, and then they make the decision to do it. I get 100% follow through. Yeah. And so it's that art of explaining, and then they realize it and why. Once somebody understands why, you know, they're going to do the right thing almost uniformly. When I tell them what to do without really explaining it, it just doesn't work.
Yeah. So I guess we're running out of time, but I guess to sum up, to go back to your original question, what ticks you off about, at the end of a day, I almost never get mad at a patient. I really don't. The only time that I get irritated is when they don't call me about something and then I've lost some opportunity, you know, and I tell patients, look, it's 3 a.m. and you're getting abdominal pain. I will be annoyed if you say, well, I waited till 8 a.m. to call you because I didn't want to wake you up. You know, I say, look, my wife sleeps with earplugs. I will answer the phone and talk to you. I may go right back to sleep after sending you to the emergency room. So, the things that do make me angry are system things. If the person comes to the front desk and they're not treated well, or if they're trying to call me and they can't get through for some reason, or if some other doctor doesn't treat them the way they should. So I think we have a long way to go.
Yeah. So I see patients at the end of life, and what really upsets me more than anything is sometimes I know about an experiment that I know in 6 months would help them. Mm-hmm. And I know it's just too late, and I can't talk about it because I don't want to, upset them. But if their disease only happened a few months later, I knew there would have been a potential, not definite, but a potential for hope. And literally it keeps me up at night because I see this over and over again. We're making progress at this crazy pace, but it's not fast enough with the people now with disease.
So I guess the punchline here, the closing thought is, if you're a patient, you don't have to please your doctor. By the way, and if you don't like your doctor, get another doctor. You don't always marry the first person you meet. But you do have a responsibility to come in and, having done your homework, think about your issues so that you can be most effective in the time that you have, and then just communicate.
100%. I always tell my patients this Malcolm Gladwell book, Blink, is an amazing concept. The human brain is great. When you come in and if they spend the first couple of minutes with me and we don't bond, I'll help them find somebody else, but I want us to like each other. I want to have an in-depth conversation. I want them to trust me, and I have to trust them. And then it's going to be a great bi-directional relationship.
And speaking of Blink, that is maybe one of my favorite moments. So I've been a doctor 38 years. I have one family that four generations. I took care of the great-grandmother, the grandmother, daughter, her daughter. And you can't explain this to a student. They have to live it. That when somebody so well and they walk through the door, they may not even say a word, something about their body language, something about their expression, and the hairs on the back of your neck stand up. And this happened very recently, a few weeks ago. A woman walked in, and I looked at her and I said, "What's the matter?" She burst into tears, and there was something going on. That's a great moment, and you say, okay, you know somebody better after 25, 30 years than after 2 years. And at that point, you trust each other. And anyway, it's a wonderful profession, isn't it?
I love it. I mean, I truly do pinch myself.
All right. Dr. David Agus.
Dr. John LaPook.
Great talking with you.
You too.
Thank you for listening. You can watch the full CBS This Morning broadcast Monday through Saturday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on your local CBS station.
Or you can stream it live on the CBS All Access app.